From the KERA Newsroom, I'm BJ Austin. In a few minutes, prepare to be enchanted by a witch at a downtown Dallas theater. First, a recent dispute in the Dallas suburb of Highland Park over the book The Art of Racing in the Rain was settled today. After review, a committee of teachers, parents, and students found it can be taught in classrooms. One thing the debate in Highland Park has shown is parents and students who object to certain books are also unhappy with their options for alternative assignments. As part of KERA's American Graduate Yearbook Project, Diana Douglas reports.
In Coppell, Texas, Eugenia Faulkner is very uncomfortable with the idea of her daughter reading books with sexual content.
I don't think we're trying to be naive about things, but it's just protecting the children of how much they know at a certain point. Now, are they going to know these things in the future? Of course. But, you know, you're not going to give a drug to a kid just because you want them to know what's out there.
She checked with the Coppell High School principal, Mike Jasso, and was happy to hear that the school's curriculum often accommodates the different values of the families in the district. She and her husband then sat down with her 10th grader.
Because of our church standards and what you're learning, you need to be given the tools to say no.
At Louisville High School in a neighboring community, high school teacher Amy Rasmussen has found that giving her 11th graders a choice of what to read for her AP language class is better than requiring a certain book. And parents rarely, if ever, object.
I provide usually a choice of 3 to 4 books so students can have a say in what they read instead of me as a teacher making all the decisions.
She's also had 7 of her own children go through the public schools. She calls herself a conservative parent and read along with her kids when they were assigned challenging material.
That creates the best conversations when you can talk to your teenager about a book. I never felt like I needed to challenge a teacher because I felt like it was my responsibility to teach my kids anyway.
Parents don't want their children to be punished for not completing a mandatory class assignment when it is contrary to their religion. Highland Park parents in the group called Speak Up for Standards have collected stories from students who tried to opt out of required readings. Some said they felt stigmatized or sat in the halls for a few weeks or saw their grades suffer. Dawson Orr, the superintendent of Highland Park Schools, hopes they can create a better experience for students who opt out of reading.
We want to be sure that if students do make an alternative choice, that we have a thoughtful instructional plan in place that supports their learning.
Offering that choice when it comes to required class reading could make things better for the students and save some real headaches for school administrators. For KERA News, I'm Diana Douglas.
This story is part of KERA's American Graduate Yearbook Project. Page through it at yearbook.kera.org. Undermain Theater is running a show called The Fairy Tale Lives of Russian Girls. The fairy tale world is actually modern Moscow, a city of hard businessmen and tough young women who survive any way they can. As KERA's Jerome Weeks reports, it may be the new Russia, but it's still haunted by old Russia in the figure of a legendary witch named Baba Yaga.
Baba Yaga did not want to be disturbed, so no one may ever sneak up on Baba Yaga, especially little girls. She surrounded the hut with a fence made of bones. There is one empty bone post in case a pretty little skull should happen her way.
That's Gail Kronauer playing Baba Yaga. In Slavic folklore, Baba Yaga lived in a forest hut and ate little children. With The Fairy Tale Lives of Russian Girls, playwright Meg Maroshnik lets Baba Yaga loose on Russia today. Her dark comedy is about how one naive American woman and several cynical young Muscovites in high heels and tight skirts must band together to try to defeat this hunched crone with her iron teeth. It may not matter much if they succeed, because at the Undermain, it's Gail Kronauer's witch who walks away with the show.
Oh, that's so sweet to say that. I'm an actress of a certain age. I mean, I look at some of the photographs and I go, oh my God, they all look so great except that woman in the babushka.
Born in Dallas, Kronauer earned her master's in theater from Case Western Reserve. She came back to Dallas in 1978 to teach at SMU. Catherine Owens, the Undermain's artistic director, sees Kronauer, now in her 60s, as one of our master artists. First at SMU and now at Collin College, Kronauer's helped train a generation of North Texas actors.
Everybody knows her and respects her. And you could see the other thing about working with Gail is when what she brings to rehearsal is such complete and utter professionalism that everyone says, oh, well, that's setting the standard.
Kronauer says even in college, she played older characters. They were the juicy roles.
I mean, my face is, not that it looks really old, but it certainly is bony and angular and lent itself to that. When I got out of grad school, it was like I didn't know how to do anything but play somebody who was really old.
That's had its advantages. In films and TV, Kronauer has been a classic character actor, appearing in everything from Oliver Stone's JFK to Dallas, the TV series. But with Baba Yaga, Kronauer plays more than just a witch. She's both loving and monstrous, creepy and funny. Baba Yaga complains she's been cursed. She ages a whole year anytime she's asked a question.
This is one of the reasons she despises little girls. They always ask questions. Why do you look so old, Baba Yaga? Ooh. This is why she feels 303. And she does not like it one bit.
Kronauer says she used to think if she could stick it out here, she'd outlast her acting competition. But lately, it's been friends and family whom she's lost. 3 years ago, her husband Mark Hoagland died. That fall, it was her mother. The next year, her father. As Baba Yaga might say, growing older is not for the weak.
It makes you aware of the fact that life isn't forever. And maybe it's one of the things that has made me value what I'm able to do in theater so much. We all have these wonderful moments when we go downstage and directly address the audience, and that's like being out on the edge of a cliff. You're out there trusting in the spirit of live theater, and it's exhilarating and terrifying, which I think theater at its best is.
This is theater as a kind of fairy tale magic. It can make an actor feel more fully alive. Jerome Weeks, KERA News.
The Fairy Tale Lives of Russian Girls runs through December 6th. Thanksgiving just wouldn't be the same without turkey, mashed potatoes, and pecan pie, which might come as a surprise to the people invited to the first Thanksgiving dinner. Today on Think, Chris Boyd talked to food historian Rebecca Rupp to find out what was featured on the pilgrims' plates.
If we were doing an absolutely traditional meal, we'd probably be featuring venison and cornmeal mush. It looks like the first Thanksgiving feast was a very eclectic meal. There's a pilgrim diary that records a number of people went out hunting shortly before the feast, which ended up lasting 3 days, and brought in a huge batch of game birds, which historians guess may have included a few wild turkey, but probably definitely ducks, geese, swans, passenger pigeons, which were thick in the skies in the 1620s, and then a lot of seafood, lobsters, clams, mussels, and eels. Eels are something you do not see on the ordinary Thanksgiving table.
So how did we ditch the eels and cornmeal mush and decide to focus on turkey?
You know, nobody really knows how the turkey became such a Thanksgiving symbol. There's one story that attributes it to Ben Franklin, who was a real pro-turkey guy, and was pitching for the turkey to be our national bird rather than the bald eagle. The turkey, he said, was a much more admirable bird. It was edible. It had a nice family life. It was attractive. I don't know how attractive they are.
Tomorrow on Think, Chris Boyd will be joined by a panel of local restaurateurs to talk about how we incorporate flavors around the world into the traditional Thanksgiving dishes. Today's episode re-airs tonight at 10, or listen to the podcast at kera.org/think. You can like KERA News on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. From the KERA Newsroom, I'm BJ Austin.